Okay, morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Sotah's Daf Kes. We are going to start today at the Mishnah on Chasmud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is known as Zichron Nishmas Liba, Gabriela Bashmuel. Bimida. The Mishnah starts off that we have a concept that comes up. I'm not sure if I'm correct about this, but it's one of Rashi's favorite themes on Chumash. Wherever he's Mefarish Chumash, so one of his themes that he keeps going back to again and again is Mida Keneged Mida, measure for measure. God operates the world as the best accountant, and so he takes everything into consideration, and when somebody is owed something, so Kosh Baruch will make sure to pay back measure for measure. So that's the common theme in Rashi throughout Chumash, and that is today's Daf. Today's Daf is dedicated to the topic of Mida Keneged Mida. So we start off with the Mishnah, Bemida. Bemida Shada Modeba, Modedin Lo. The measure that a person is measured is the same measure that he's going to be measured with. And why are we learning this idea now, this concept now? Because nowhere better do we see this than by the Sota, and the Mishnah is going to give us examples. And as many examples as the Mishnah is going to give us, the Gemara is going to give even more. So let's go through the Mishnah's example. He kashta satsma, she la'avera. So she adorned herself for the purposes of avera, for being with another man. Hamakam navla. So Akadosh Baruch Hu disheveled her, meaning through the procedure of Sota that we're instructed to do. So Akadosh Baruch Hu is basically saying to her, okay, so you dress yourself up, so you're going to get dressed down. So he galta asatzma la'avera hamakom gila hamakom gila alaha biyerech. So she revealed herself for the purpose of Avera. So Kadosh Baruch Hu was Megala her by exposing. So in terms of the order in which she presented her body to the man, so first came the thigh and then came the stomach. So in terms of the onish, in terms of the liqui, the punishment, so first comes the thigh and then comes the stomach. But then the Mishnah reminds us that the rest of the body is not going to escape punishment. It just happens to be that in terms of the order of operations, so it starts with the thigh, and then so it starts with the stomach based on the principle of Mida Keneged Mida. Amar Rav Yosef Af Agav De Mida Betela Bim Mida Lo Batel. So Rav Yosef teaches us that so we don't have Mida to the same extent that we had when we had a base of Mikdash, but Bimida Lo Batel. But still, there is this concept of Bimida. What are we talking about? Mida versus Bimida? So take a look at Rashi over here, but really it's going to be clear from the Gemara coming up. Rashi writes, the first Rashi on the Mishnah, Afagav Dimida. So Atzma Bitela Shepasko Arba Mises Beis. And we no longer have a base of Mikdash. And we no longer have a Sanhedrin. And we no longer have an execution of capital punishment. The Arba Mises Beis. So all that's gone. But Bimida Lobato, look at the next Rashi. Shemodim Lahem La Ovre Avera Bimida Shemischaivim Abba Umesim Bidugma Sosamisa. What Akash Baruch Hu does is that basically he will put the person to death the way they would have gotten it had there been a base of Mikdash. Obviously, not exactly the same, but Bidugma. In other words, an example. An example will be Akash Baruch Hu will choose a method of death which will be representative of the Mises Beis Din. So the Gemara gives a number of examples of this concept. The Amar of Yosef Echentini Rabbi Chaim Yom Shachar Beis Hamikdash from the time the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Alpha Pisha Batla Sanhedrin Arba Mises Lo Batlo. Even though the Sanhedrin was nullified, there's no longer Sanhedrin, but still the Arba Mises, the four forms of death, did not stop. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Baha Batlu. Of course they did.
They stopped sitting Sanhedrin because they're like, they don't want to put out all the punishment.
That's part of it. But okay, well, the Gemara right now is making a very specific point about the Dugma. So the Gemara says, what do you mean it stopped? Aladin Arba Mises Lo Batlu. So the Gemara says, you're right. Of course, once Sanhedrin no longer operated, and right, the Gemara tells us elsewhere that already 40 years prior to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, they stopped judging. But anyway, but the Mida hasn't stopped. So for example, Gemara gives a number of examples. Mishnah is Chayv Skila. Let's say someone's Chayv Skila. Okay, Arba Mises Beis Din. There are four ways that a person is put to death by Beis Din, depending on what the Chayt is. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Sanhedrin. We'll spend a lot of time in the Gemara Sanhedrin going through the Averas, the Mises Beis Din, how we know them. Anyway, so if a person's Chayiv Skila, oh no, from a Nagago, Chayiv Dor Saso. So either the person will fall off a roof or will be gored to death by an animal. In other words, a high impact collision, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put him to death that way, and it'll be analogous, bedugma, to the skila. Mishin is chayiv streifa, o nofel b'dleko, nachash machisho. A person is chayiv streifa, so either he'll die in a fire, or will be bitten by a snake. The poison of the snake is considered burning. Mishin is chayiv hariga, o nimsel machos, o listen by nalav. A person's chayiv hariga, hereg, the decapitation. So either will be given over to the machos, where they traditionally decapitate, or will be assaulted by robbers and be decapitated. Mishin is chayiv chaniko, toveh ben aro, o meis sarvanki. Someone who is chayiv chanika. Chanika is asphyxiation, the choking to death. So he'll drown or will die with some sort of disease that will asphyxiate him. Tanya Rabbi Meir minayin shebimidish adamod deba modin lo. So the Gemara quotes a braisa, the Tosefta. And the Tosefta speaks to this idea as well. How do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates the world using this concept of Mida Keneged Mida? So, Shenamar Bisasa B'Shalcha Tirivenim. So, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Yeshayahu, and the Navi indicates that Bisasa, meaning in the measurement. HaKadosh Baruch Hu meets a person in the measurement. In an equivalent measurement. Ainly ala sa'a minan la rabas tarkov ka v'chatzi kav rova v'chatzi rova tamam v'uchla minayin. So good. So the pasuk in Yeshayahu tells us b'sa'a sa'a, meaning if a person has accumulated a sa'a, now again, we're talking about a certain cubic measurement, right? It's hard to understand this as it relates to averos, meaning how exactly does an avera measure up, so to say? Okay, so that's... obviously, I leave that for the accountant, meaning with a capital A, to figure that out. But still, the point is that the Navi Yeshayahu says that only when you get to that measurement. But how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates in smaller units of measurements, smaller averos? Tamalamar ki kol savan v'savan birash. So the Gemara quotes another pasuk from Yeshayahu, which also indicates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki kol. Every amount that a person does, a Kadosh Baruch Hu meets him with that measure. And how do we know we have this concept of accumulation? Meaning, right now, I'm sinning a little bit. Tomorrow, I'll sin a little bit. And next day, I'll sin a little bit. And how do we know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu accumulates one after another? And it's not just measure for measure based on one chait, one onesh, but actually, it builds up. So Tamalamar achas la achas limso cheshbon. So we have another pasuk in Koheles that speaks to this idea of accumulation. V'chematzin besota shebemida shemadda ba madadu la. So here the Brice of the Tosefta is going to go exactly do exactly what our Mishnah did with even more detail than what our Mishnah did, and we're going to see all this playing to action as it relates to the sota. He amda pesach beisa leira oslo lefichach kol mamida sharni kano. Number one, she presents herself to the man, to this other man at the entrance of her doorway to try to entice him to come in. She will be presented in the Beis HaMikdash at the entrance, at the Sharni Kanur, the eastern gate entrance of the Beis HaMikdash, but obviously for the purposes of Kalona, of embarrassment. He parsalo sojin sujana and al rosha. She puts attractive scarves on her head. Leficha kohenoto kipa me al rosha. Umenicha tachas ragla. Therefore the kohen takes off the covering of her head and places it under her feet. He kashalo paneha. She adorns her face. Leficha paneha marikos. As a result of that, her face is going to drop. It's going to deflate. So the Rashi says that when right now the Gemara is describing, the Tosefta is describing, once she starts drinking the water, so her face kind of it deflates. So she put some sort of makeup on her eyes. Her eyes are going to swell after she drinks. She braids her hair. The Kohen undoes her hair. She points with a finger, and as a result of that, her fingernails fall off. And again, Rashi says that this is after she drinks from the water. He chagrolo b'tzotzel, she puts on some sort of belt. Lefi chakoin mevi chaval hamitzvah koshal ala mala medada. Therefore, the kohen takes the chaval hamitzvah and ties it up around her before starting to remove the upper clothing. So again, mida keneged mida. He pashalo es yerecha lefi chakirecha nofelas. She presents her yerech to the man, so therefore her yerech is going to fall after she drinks the water. He kablas al kresa. She accepts the man on her stomach. Lefi chak bin etzava. Therefore, her stomach swells. He achilah matne olam. She, when is trying to entice this man, feeds him very good food. Lefichach karbanah ma'achal behema. Her carbon that she brings is ma'achal behema. As we pointed out already a couple of times, the carbon that's brought by sota is a mincha, but a mincha made up of barley, not of wheat. Most menachos, almost all menachos, are made up of wheat. This is the exception to the rule. This and the carbon that's brought on the second day of Pesach, the carbon ha'omer. The Gemara describes barley as ma'achal behema. It's animal food. So she behaved in such an animalistic way, and she presented fine food to the man, so therefore her carbon is going to be considered Meichel Behema. Then it only begs the question, how do you explain the carbon omer that we bring on the second day of Pesach? There's no shame in the carbon omer. So,
you heard?
Yeah, what'd you hear?
In the name of Rabbersh, he said that when Israel left Egypt, they were at the level of an animal.
Right.
They take them
right.
7 weeks to elevate themselves to a level of the
very good. I heard something similar. He hishkasalo yayin mishubach bekosos mishubachim. She presented wine, fine wine, in fine cups. Lefichachoy mashke mayim hamarim bemikidah shel cheres. She's going to be drinking bitter water in an earthenware jug. He asa b'seiser. So she did everything privately. Yoshe b'seiser elyon samba panim. Kadosh Baruch Hu, who is Yoshe b'seiser elyon, he's the ultimate hidden. Hidden one. He's going to place his face on this woman, meaning he will deal with her directly. Shenemer v'ayin noef shemer neshef leimor lo tishurani ayin. Cannot escape from the eye. Davar Acher, the Gemara gives a different shot in this last point of Mida Keneged Mida. He asa b'seiser hamakom pirsam abigaloi. She did it privately. Kadosh Baruch Hu reveals it publicly. Shenemer techases sina b'mashaon tigler aso b'kahal. So the pasuk says that if somebody does something privately, it will be exposed to the congregation. Okay, period. Okay, Ad Kan Divrei HaTosefta. So the Tosefta, like the Mishnah, introduces us to this concept of Mida Keneged Mida. What's interesting, and the Gemara is going to pick up on this right now, is that the Tosefta quotes not one, not two, but three various psukim throughout Navi that introduce us to this idea of Mida Keneged Mida. We had two psukim from Yeshayahu. One was B'sa'asa, B'sha'achal Terivena. So that speaks to the Sa'ah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us a measure of the Sa'ah. How do we know that we work in even smaller increments? The second pasuk, ki kol savan savan birash. So, and then the last pasuk in Koheles, achas la'achas limtzar cheshbon. So three psukim in Navi speak to the idea of mida keneged mida, and you know what's going to happen right now in the Gemara. Why three psukim? Meaning, if you have one pasuk, isn't that enough? Umi acher, that's the Gemara's question. We're in the middle of Testament Aleph, a little bit, about halfway down. Why do I have the pasuk in Yeshayahu after I have the pasuk from Koheles? Okay. So the Gemara says, I need that pasuk, that extra pasuk, to teach me the principle of kimida. Kimida, like we learned earlier this morning, that even though if you're not going to get the exact punishment, but you're going to get, that the punishment itself is going to reflect the chait that you did. Meaning it's not enough that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just going to go measure for measure, but it's actually going to be a reflection of the chait. Once I have the second pasuk, why do I need the first pasuk that the Braisa quoted? Lichad Rab China bar Papa, Dam Rab China bar Papa, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nifra Mina Uma, Ashas Shilucha. So the Gemara learns out another point, and that is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu extracts payment from a nation, meaning we're no longer talking on an individual level, we're talking on a national level. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu extracts retribution from a nation, so that is Achash Shiluchah. It is a total obliteration of the nation. meaning the nation will be gone. Shenamra b'sasa b'shacha. So the b'shacha here is an indication that on a national level, a nation can be obliterated. Any of the Gemara says, is that really true? Meaning when a nation is punished, the nation is gone in totality. V'amar rava shal shakosos hamurz b'mitzrayim lama. So the Gemara starts off now with a discussion of this idea of mida keneged mida on a national level as it relates to Mitzrayim. We know that Mitzrayim, the story of Mitzrayim starts with Yosef. Yosef goes down to Mitzrayim. Yosef is imprisoned in Mitzrayim, and under the leadership of Mitzrayim, the leader in Mitzrayim is always called Paro. That's just the name of the leader of Mitzrayim. So he sent two people to prison together with Yosef. Both had a dream, and at the end of Parshas Vayeshev, so Yosef hears and interprets the dreams. One of the dreams was where one had a dream about squeezing three grapes into a cup. And into three cups, right? Three grapes into three cups. And so the three cups, everything obviously over here is symbolic. And so what is the symbolism behind the three cups? Just as a parenthetical note, on Pesach we have a minag, a mitzvah, to drink dalakosis, to drink four cups of wine. The Gemara in 10th Perek of Pesachim discusses it extensively. The Gemara never explains why four cups of wine, never. And the Midrashim explain, and the Rashbam in the beginning of the Perek brings the Medrash down. But another Medrash which is brought, which actually the Rashbam himself doesn't bring, is that Rashi later in the Perek, I think. Or what we call Rashi. Later in the Perek gives a Medrash that it relates to the three cups of Paro, meaning that in the dream. Now, three obviously doesn't equal four, but, okay, that's a small problem, but there's Kiddush, meaning the... That's the Rashbam. The Rashbam, but that's a Medrash. That's not the Gemara. Okay? So, with all that stated, anyway, back to our Gemara. So there are three cups. So what are the three cups representative? Lama acha shesharfim bimei Moshe. One is going to be during the days of Moshe. Meaning, each cup is symbolic of the destruction of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim will be destroyed, and then destroyed a second time, and destroyed a third time. Right? The kosh shel tarei la. Right? That's Rashi's language over there. The Medrash's language regarding regarding as it relates to Pesach. Meaning, the cups are cups of destruction. Three times Mitzrayim are going to be destroyed. So once during Moshe, Ba'achas, Sheshas, B'yemei Paro Necho, a second time during Paros Necho, that's Nebuchadnezzar's invasion into Mitzrayim, and Ba'achas, Shatid, Lishtos, Chavar Seha. And then Lost Lavo, Bizman Ha'Geula, so Mitzrayim will be destroyed a third time. So that's three times, that's two times too many. Meaning, we just learned together this concept that Mida Keneged Mida on a national level means that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu is done with a nation, he's done with that nation. That nation will be destroyed, obliterated. And meanwhile, Egypt is down but not out. Right? And needs to be destroyed a second time, needs to be destroyed a third time. How does that work? And the Gemara says, and maybe you'll make the following suggestion. That round two and round three, it's Egypt geographically, but it's not Egyptians. Maybe after Moshe and Churban Mitzrayim. I know it's not an expression we use very often. But after Moshe and Churban Mitzrayim, maybe the next wave of Egypt was populated by a foreign nationality who just simply occupied Egypt, and they were destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar under the rule of Parnacho. And then another nationality went and came and occupied Egypt, and then lost it, Lavo. That's going to be the third destruction. The Gemara says maybe that's going to be a suggestion.
Nebuchadnezzar repopulated and transferred people, so like...
We'll get to that. You think of Sancheriv.
Right.
Right, we're going to get to that. V'atanyam Rav Yehuda minyam agera mitzvah yelo chaver mitamid Rabbi Kiva. So the Gemara says, if don't suggest that for the following reason. Because we know that there is a convert. His name was Min Yamim. Sounds a lot like Bin Yamin, just instead of the Beis the Mem. And he was an Egyptian, and he was a student of Rabbi Akiva. So we are now at the end of Beit Sheni, well after Moshe, well after Parnacho and Nebuchadnezzar. We are, only a short 1800, 1900 years ago. So, Minyamin was a student of Rabbi Kiva. Amar Minyamin Gera Mitzvah, Ani Mitzvah Rishon, V'Nesasi Mitzvah Rishona. And he says the following. Just a small background, but I'm sure we know this already. An Egyptian can convert, no problem at all. The love of a cow, the ability to marry a Jew, so cannot do. In other words, so yes, conversion, but no to full integration to the Jewish people. When it comes to an Egyptian, what happens? So they convert. They'll have a child. That child will be second generation. That child will have a child. That'll be third generation. The Torah says, Dor Shlishi Yavo Bekal. Once you get to third generation Egyptian, so now there's an allowance of full integration. So Minyamin HaMitzvah is just basically saying, I'm going to make sure that my grandchild will be able to fully integrate into the Jewish people. And how do I do that? Because I'm a first generation. I'll marry a first generation. I'll make sure that my kid, a second generation Egyptian convert, will marry a second generation Egyptian convert. Because, as Rashi points out, based on the Gemara in Yevamos, if my kid were to marry a first generation convert, so a first and a second produce a second. So, holechachar apsul. The Gemara in Yevamos gives us the basic rule. So the child is always going to be a, don't take me too literally, but a worst case scenario. So if it's a one and a two getting married, the child's going to be a two, even though one of its parents is a two. So I'll just make sure. I'll marry a first generation. I'm a first generation. I'll make sure my kid marries a second generation Egyptian convert. And that way my children will be able to marry and fully integrate into the Jewish people. Good. That's what he said. Now, if that's what he's saying, think about what he's saying. He's saying that I'm a full-blooded Egyptian, meaning I come from Egyptian lineage. And when the Torah says that lo yavo mitzvah bekal Hashem ador shlishi, I think I did a terrible job quoting the pasuk. You'll forgive me. I don't have a chumash in front of me. But anyway, but when the Torah says it, the Torah was addressing me because I'm a full-blooded Egyptian. So that's our Gemara. And based on that, it's clear that an Egyptian in the time of Rabbi Akiva was a full-fledged Egyptian. And it wasn't a new nationality that occupied Egypt. Had it been a new nationality, Minyamin would have no problems whatsoever converting and fully integrating himself into the Jewish people. With all that stated, we have a problem. Because the Gemara said that on a national level, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu extracts punishment on a nationality, on one of the nations of the world, it's total destruction. How could that be? By the time Minyamin comes around, Mitzrayim was destroyed two times over. And it should have been the full destruction after the first time. That's a question. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to change our tune just a little bit. So what the Gemara means is min ha-melech, meaning we're not talking about extraction of punishment from the nation, but we're rather talking about the king. Okay, so not the nation, but rather just the king. This brings us to a very important and big discussion. I'll bring it up very briefly, but see the lengthy Tosfos over here? The lengthy Tosfos over here has a major debate amongst the Rishonim whether Egyptians nowadays are Egyptians or not Egyptians. Meaning, what came out from our Gemara? Seems pretty clear from our Gemara that Egyptians nowadays, and when I say nowadays, I mean I'm going back to the time of the Gemara, but it certainly seems like lo'olam va'ed, meaning... No major change since Zman HaGemara in the time of now. Sounds like the Gemara felt that the Egyptians were in fact full-fledged Egyptians, dating back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, going back to the point of origination. They are Egyptians. And that means then that one is not allowed to marry an Egyptian convert. And not the child of an Egyptian convert, but only the grandchild of an Egyptian convert. That's what it certainly sounds like from our Gemara. The problem is based on a Gemara in Brachos. If you take a look at the beginning of Tosfos on Testament Aleph, I'll raise the issue and I'll outline the two opinions, and obviously there's much more to talk about. But take a look at the top of Tosfos on Testament Aleph, Minyamin Gera Mitzvi V'chulei, Makshim Miperik Tfilos HaShachar. Everyone asks the question based on the fourth parak of Brachos. Da'amar Baba Yom, Amad Yehuda, Gera Moni, Lifneim, Bebeis HaMedrash, V'am Alehem, Ma'ani Lava Bakal. So there was a convert from the tribe of Ammon, as opposed to a Mitzri. At least the Mitzri is allowed full integration into the Jewish people after the third generation. Ammon? Never. Right? The Gemara in Yevamah says, it's based on a Pasuk and Chumash, in Parshas Ki Seitzei, that Lo Yavo Ammoni Moavi Bekal Hashem. Right? There, I think I did a better job quoting the Pasuk. But please forgive me for quoting without looking inside. So the... Right, gam dor asiri lo yavo. Right, not the tenth, meaning never. Amonim over never allowed to integrate. Again, they're allowed to convert. But this is a common misconception. They're allowed to convert. Conversion is not an issue, right? For those who question Rus's status, it never was a question of conversion. Conversion is always allowed. It's just a question now of integration. Are they allowed to marry Bikal Hashem? That's the issue. So this Ger Amoni was asking the question. He went into the Beis Medrash, and he was asking the question: can I marry to the Jewish people? Now, Beis Medrash, Amar Lahem Mani Lavo Bikal, Amar Lo Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel answers. Now Rabbi Gamliel, we're now again at the end of Bayis Sheni. And Rabbi Gamliel is responding, Aser Ata. So he says, you can't. You're from Ammon. So again, you're allowed to convert, that's fine. You're allowed to learn Torah, that's fine. You're a Jew. It's just that you're not allowed to full integration. You can't marry. He'll marry another convert. The Gemara in Kiddushin, the fourth parak, we'll get to it. Goes over, basically, I know we don't like to think about classes, but basically they're classes. So they're different classes. So he'll marry other psulim,
Like 2 or 3, 4 generations when they can come in?
Ammon, never.
No, Mitzri,
yes. Yeah. Okay, fine. So Amalei Rabbi Yoshua Mutarata. So Rabbi Yoshua says, no, you're allowed to. So Amalei Rabbi Gamliel Valoksiv lo yavo Ammoni Moavi. So Rabbi Gamliel says, what are you talking about? The Pasuk says he can't, and never. And Tosos, I'm reading Tosos, who's quoting the Gemara in Brachos. So Rabbi Yoshua's answer is, really? You think Amon Amov are really Amon Amov? They're not. Kulo. We know that Sancheriv, who came towards the end of Bayis Rishon, he was the king of Assyria, and he came and he conquered the entire world. And after conquering the entire world, what did he do? He did a mass distribution, where basically he took people from here and he placed them here, and he took people from here and he placed them here. We know this most famously because the ten tribes, meaning Sancheriv destroyed the ten northern tribes. And what did he do with those 10 northern tribes? The answer is very simple. We don't know. That's why they're the 10 lost tribes. So he took them and he scattered them out and he replaced them. And who did he replace them with? A group of people from this little town called Kusa. And those people are living in the north are called Kusim. Right? So and Sancheriv didn't just do this with the northern tribes. He did this with Kolam Kulo. He did this with the entire world population. And by the way, the move is a move of securing power. Because once everyone is distributed and redistributed, so now, what's the nationality that's going to stand up to Sancheriv? There is no nationality. Everyone has lost their nationality. So, so that's the Gemara in Brachos. So the Gemara in Brachos said to this convert from Ammon, even though you think you're from Ammon in name, you're really not. Meaning because what Sancheriv did hundreds of years ago, meaning Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, at the end of Bayis Sheni, Sancheriv was about approximately 150 years before Churban Bayis Rishon, approximately. So we're talking at least 500 years earlier. At least 500 years earlier, Sancheriv went ahead and he scattered the entire world population. So you're not really from Ammon. You think you're from Ammon, but that's just a name. But you're not a full-blooded Ammonite. Therefore, it's good news. Therefore, you're allowed to convert, and you're allowed to integrate, and you're allowed to marry to the Jewish people. That's the Gemara in Brachos. And so, what we have over here now is a basic issue. Our Gemara that we just learned today in Sota says that this Minyamin, the Egyptian convert, is a full-fledged Egyptian, going back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, even back earlier. And meanwhile, the Gemara in Brachos says that the person from Ammon is in Ammon in name, but genealogically is not an Ammonite, and therefore, no problem converting, no problem integrating and marrying into the Jewish people. You have a stira between our Gemara and the Gemara in Brachos. Again, from this point going forward, just an outline, two basic approaches amongst the Rishonim. Rashi says, the Gemara in Brachos is the one we're going to favor on this issue. What do you do with our Gemara? How do you read our Gemara? See further in see further in Tosfos for that discussion. But Rashi says that Sancheriv mixed up the entire world, and therefore nobody is genealogically who they say they are.
So that, if there's a suffix, shouldn't be because the writer should be Masmira.
It's the Gemara's response to the Ammonite makes it sound like it's more than a suffix, meaning he did it. Sancheriv did it. And so,
for any girl, it's a suffix that it could be or not. So since the writer,
right, but
for 10 years, for 10 generations, or indefinitely.
Without seeing this directly inside, your question's good. But without seeing this directly inside, I would say that it's less than a suffix. It's a miut. It's only a small percentage chance that's so. And generally speaking, we follow Rove. We follow the majority. Okay, but that's right now my best guess. That is the Shita of Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam, which Tosfos over here quotes, disagrees. Rabbeinu Tam says no. The Egyptian is an Egyptian. And genealogically an Egyptian, Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that you're not allowed to marry an Egyptian convert. Anyway, that's very brief. Obviously, Tosfos covers the entire Amud. See more Tosfos for more discussion on this issue. We're going to go back to our Gemara. We're going to resume today's daf. But in the meantime, however, obviously a big issue, an important issue, and really the problem is the two Gemaras seem to be conflicting with one another. Okay. Sorry, lost my spot. Amemar. Two-thirds of the way down on the Gemara on Testament Aleph. We're continuing. Amemar Masal Ahad Rav Chinna Bar Papa Ha. Rav Chinna Bar Papa, the Gemara just said that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Nifra Min HaMelech, seeks retribution from the king. So the Gemara says, it comes from the following. My dichtiv was the pasuk say, Kenei Hashem Lo Shanisi, V'atem B'nei Yaakov Lo Chilisim. So as far as I, Kadosh Baruch Hu, am concerned, I never change, says the pasuk Malachi. And you, B'nei Yaakov Lo Chilisim, you will never be destroyed, Kadosh Baruch Hu says to B'nei Yaakov, meaning us. Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi Lo Hikisi Lo Uma V'Shanisi La. And what does it mean, Lo Shanisi, in this context? It means that as it relates to me and other nations are concerned, so I strike them, I hit them, I destroy them one time, and that's all I need. There's no round two. Now, as far as the Jewish people are concerned, unfortunately, we know this all too well. So there's been attempts to destroy us. Kadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that we're never destroyed. Meaning we're the opposite of the other Ummas. The other Ummas, one attempt of destruction for the other Ummas, and that's all they need. It's one and out. For us, we keep on going. Even though there are attempts to destroy us, we keep on going. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not extract retribution from a person until his measure is filled. So the Naveh, the palace, is going to be praised. Zeh Moshe v'David. The Gemara says this drasha is relatable to Moshe and David. Shalosh shaltu sonim b'maaseihem. Whatever Moshe did was enduring, never destroyed. Whatever David created was enduring, never destroyed. David dichsev tavu ba'aretz she'areha. What did David build? So the Gemara is not clear. The Gemara says she'areha. So it says that he built gates. Now, gates over here could be a reference to Ir David, could be a reference to the gates of the Beis Hamikdash. We know that David did not build the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, I mean that's the pasuk Navi, his son did, but maybe even though he wasn't allowed to build the Beis Hamikdash, but maybe what he did is he built the front gates of the Beis Hamikdash. Anyway, the Gemara's point is whatever David made is enduring. In fact, at the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, what happened to the gates? They sunk right into the ground. Meaning the Nebuchadnezzar was not allowed to destroy the work of David HaMelech. Moshe Damamar Misha Nignava Mikodesh Mikdash Rishon Nignas Oel Moed Karashav Karasav Ubricha V'Amuda V'Adanav. That the Mishkan that Moshe made, so that was taken into the into Eretz Yisrael. And obviously with the construction of the first base of Mikdash, so the Oel was still there, I guess, in somewhere in storage. But when Nebuchadnezzar came to destroy, so what happened to the Mishkan that was made by Moshe Rabbeinu? It was Nignas. It was put in hiding. And again, Nebuchadnezzar did not get to destroy that as well. It was part of the Masi Adayim of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Gemara says you're going to find it in the tunnels. Okay, so next time you tour the tunnels of the coastal, ask to see the Ohel Moed of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. I assume it's there, just undiscovered yet. Tana Rabbanan Sota Nisna Inaha B'Misha Einu Ra'ila Masha Biksha Lo Nitan La Umasha Biyada Nalu Amimenu. The Gemara now is going to quote another Tosefta, which is going to make a similar point to Mida Keneged Mida, but actually it's going to be even a more subtle point. And that is that the Sota cast her eyes on someone that she was not allowed to have. So what she asked for is not given to her, and moreover, what she currently has is going to be taken away. And the Gemara is going to give a number of examples of how this is so. So, mashbik shelo nidna v'lav umashbi yada nadlu imenu. Shikola nosin edav mashayna shelo mashemavakish enosin lo umashbi yada nadlu imenu. And the Gemara says, and this is a rule. This is a general rule of life that when you look to something that does not belong to you, A, you're not going to get it, and B, that which you currently have is going to be taken away from you. We're now on the top of Testament Beis. V'chematzinu b'nachash ha-kadmoni. So, examples of this principle. Number one, the Gemara says, nachash ha-kadmoni shenanslav eina b'mashin ha-ra'ilo. So he looks towards Chava, and as Rashi points out, and I'll quote the Rashi in just a moment, he did more than just look towards Chava. Umash b'kishlo natnalo, umash b'yado natluhu mimenu. That which he has was taken away from him. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ani amarti yehi melech ha-kol behema v'chaya. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I said to you, the Nachash, you're the king. You were supposed to be the king of all the animals. And now you're going to be cursed. I said, you're going to be walking upright. But now you're going to be walking on your belly. You're going to be crawling on your belly. You were going to eat the kind of food that humans were going to eat. Now you're going to eat dirt. He wanted to kill Adam, marry Chava. Now all I'm going to do is put constant animosity, a natural animosity between you, Chava, your descendants, her descendants. V'chein matzino. Now we're going to get to the other examples, but just if I may quote Rashi very quickly, Nachash HaKadmoni, the first Rashi on the Amud, Nasan Eina B'chava Uva Alaha. So Rashi says that it was that actually he was Mizana with Chava. Obviously, it's hard to visualize what the Nachash looked like prior to the klala of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it was clearly he was. Again, it's hard. It's hard to visualize exactly what that is. But Rashi quotes the pasuk, "Dichsev hanachash hisiani." So hisiani, we normally understand as she's saying he tricked me. But the word hisiani is also derivative of nisuin, lashon tashmish v'nisuinu. Okay, so again, this idea, this concept that when you look to something that you should not be, that's not, you're not entitled to. So A, you're not going to get it, and B, that which you currently have is taken away from you. So up for an example was Nachash HaKadmoni. Gemara goes on and cites many other examples. Sorry, I lost my spot. So V'chem Atzina B'Kayin. So the Gemara says another example is Kain. Take a look at Rashi quickly. Rashi writes, Nasan Eina B'Teuma Yisera Shenolda Im Hevel Sheshtei Teumos Nolda Imo. So how did they populate the earth? So they married their twin. Kain had one twin and Hevel had two twin sisters. So Kain wanted the additional twin. V'hainu Dichsiv Es Achiv Es Hevel Shnei Esim Shnei Ribuyim. And this idea that Hevel had two is based on a drasha, the Esim, which we darshan. We just talked the other day about whether we darshan Esim or we don't darshan Esim. Clearly, over here, we are darshaning Esim. So, again, an example of, wasn't entitled to him. I guess it was understood back then that you are entitled to your twin, and in Hevel's case, his twins. But, so again, same story. Look for something that he wasn't entitled to. Not only didn't get it, but that which he had was taken away from him as well. Next example, Korach. So he wanted the kahuna, that which he was not entitled to. So once again, A, he didn't get the kahuna. B, That which he had was taken away from him.
He wasn't entitled to because it was belonging to somebody else.
Right, exactly. It's the same example all these times around. Next example, Bilam. So what did he want? Mamono shel Balak lekalas Yisrael. So he wanted the money of Balak. And again, he wasn't entitled to it. I'm injecting in Rashi, he wasn't entitled to it because he wasn't entitled to curse the Jewish people. But in other words, he wasn't entitled to it, so he wanted something that he wasn't entitled to, so A, he didn't get it, and B, he lost. He lost, Rashi, v'nerak b'minyan, shalach lito schar esim v'arba'i elef, shenaflu mi'yisro b'atzmo, I'm sorry, b'atzaso. So in other words, when it came time for collections, so he himself went for collections, and he died. Next, Doeg. So, Abir Haron. I'm sorry. I'm going back to Rashi. Abir Haron v'gadol shabataminim hayav v'nitkane b'David sharo navon navon davar v'ish tawar umar panim balacha. So Doeg was a tremendous talmid chacham, right? An outstanding talmid chacham. But then he saw David. He saw, oh, David's also pretty good. Like he also knows what he's doing. So Umar panim balacha ki dichtiv hinei ra'isi ben liyishai beis alachmi v'amar ba'agada dechelak pasuk hazeh Doeg amar b'lashon hara, meaning Doeg was saying regarding David HaMelech, he's a talmid chacham, but not such a talmid chacham, meaning he wanted the kind of scholarship that David HaMelech had. So again, something. And this one's an interesting one. Something he wasn't entitled to. That part's a little tricky. But in other words, A, he didn't get it, and B, that which he had was taken away from him. Sorry. Ubilam v'doeg. Right. Achi Tofel. So Achi Tofel wanted the melucha. Mm-hmm. So he thought he was going to get it. So he didn't live to half his days. Gechazi. So he wanted the money of Naaman. Naaman was given leprosy. So Naaman went all around looking for the cure. Finally went to Elisha. Elisha said, go take a dip in the Jordan. And then he was cured. Naaman went to go pay. He went to Gehazi. Gehazi's instructions were, don't take a dime. Like, no money. Gehazi took money that he was not entitled to. So once again, not only did he get, he looked at something that he was not entitled to, but also Gehazi was given tzaras. Avshalom, Adoniahu, Uziahu, Haman. Okay, so I know I want to go quicker, but okay. Avshalom wanted the melucha, didn't get it. Adoniahu, same story, wanted the melucha, didn't get it. Uziahu, he wanted the kahuna, and the tzaras spread over his face. And Haman, okay, that one's I think the most famous. Shenasnu anem b'mashein aray lahem, mashibikshu lo nita lahem, or mashibiyadam natlu mehem. So they took things that did not belong, they wanted things that did not belong to them. A, they didn't get it, and B, that which they have was taken away from them. Continue in the Gemara. B'yerech itchila ba'aver menani mileilem emishim dechzi b'seis Hashem yirechech nofelos v'es yarech. Sorry, skipped a line. V'es bitnech tzava. The Chumash, Parshas Naso, when describing the Sota, so it says that the curse was, first your thigh is going to be afflicted, and then your stomach. Exactly as the order given to us in our Mishnah and in the Braisa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'll tell you what, I'll show you another pasuk where in this other pasuk in Parshas Naso, it actually describes how first the stomach is going to get bloated and then the hips are going to fall. So the Gemara says, when the Kohen gives the curse, first he curses the Yerech and then the Betan because that was the order of the Avera. However, Mikey Batku ki or chaihu batku. But look, but the water comes in, obviously the water is ingested orally, goes through the esophagus, and then hits the stomach first. So the first thing that's going to be affected by the water is the stomach, because that's what the water hits first. And then it goes down to the hips, and then the hips are going to drop. But the water goes in as it naturally would, and that's why the order is first stomach and then hips. I'm sorry. Again, I skipped a line. I'm sorry. V'hadayarech. Kibat gorechai batko. Betem reisha v'hadayarech. Biklal anamik siyev litzbos batem v'lin pol yarech. And as it relates to the curse, the Torah also says that your stomach is going to bloat and your hip is going to fall. Ha'i demodol ha'koin de betem reisha v'hadayarech shalo lahot yilaz amayim mamarim. So the Gemara says, yeah, because at one point the Kohen wants to tell the woman, here's what's actually going to happen. Meaning, even though in my initial warning I told you, first hip and then stomach, and again, that's based on the principle of Midah Keneged Midah, but I just want you to know that in actuality, that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is first stomach and then hip, because that's how the word is going to come in, and we don't want people to speak ill about the Mayim Hamarim. I always find this idea so fascinating. Meaning, here's a woman who's going to die instantaneously in the Beis HaMikdash because of what she did. It's pretty clear, and yet there are cynics out there who are going to say, yeah, but it wasn't in the same order as the Kohen predicted, and yeah, okay, look, cynics are just, you know, they're cynical people, and you know, whenever they can pick at something, they will. Okay, let's continue. Shimshon halacha achra einav lefichach naku plishim es einav. Okay, so the final Mishnah over here in the first parak is not going to let go of this idea of midah keneged midah, and it's going to obviously segue into the next number of days of Gemara, where the Gemara is going to be fixated on this principle of midah keneged midah all the way till we get to the second parak. So let's learn the Mishnah together. Shimshon followed his eyes, lefichach nikru plishtim eseinav, and therefore the plishtim gouged his eyes. Shenemar v'yachzu plishtim v'nakru eseinav. Avshalom nitka e b'sa'aro. Avshalom adorned his hair. Lefichach nitla b'sa'aro. He was hung by his hair. Ulefisha ba'al eser pilak she'aviv. Lefichach nitnu bo eselun v'yos. And he had relations with 10 of the pilakshim of his father, David. And as a result of that, he had 10 spears going through his body. Shenemar v'yisbu asaranashim. Nosei klei yoav. Ulefisha ganav gimel ganavos. Or the gear says Gimel of Avos. He stole three hearts. Who are the three hearts that he stole? Lev Aviv, Lev Beis, and Lev Yisrael. The heart of his father, the heart of Beis, and the heart of Yisrael. So Lefichach Nitku'u Bo Gimel Shvatim. He was therefore pierced in the heart three times over. Shenemar Vikach Shlosha Shvatim. Shvatim over here means spears. Bekapov Itkem Belev Avshalom. And pierced in the heart three times. Vechein Le'inyan Atova. Now, that's a lot of bad. And now the Mishnah is going to switch gears. Same point, same idea, but now Latova. V'chein l'inyan ha'tova. Miriam, he intended to Moshe sha'achas. Miriam waited just one hour for Moshe Rabbeinu Shenema v'titatzeva chosem merachok. L'fichach nit akvu la Yisrael zayin yamim b'midbar. Therefore, the Jewish people waited 7 days for her as she was healing from her tzarah. Shenema v'amlon asad hayasev Miriam. And now, you'll notice, by the way, and this point is pretty obvious from the Mishnah, that when we do Tova, so it's not an equivalency. Meaning, as it relates to Ra'ah, the Gemara said once, three times over, everything is equivalency. Measure for measure. Here, when it comes to Tova, Kadosh Baruch Hu rewards, and the reward is going to be greater than the original. Okay, which obviously is a good thing. Yosef Zachalikbor's Aviv, Ve'ein Be'achiv Gadol Mimenu. Yosef buried his father, and Yosef was the greatest of the brothers. It's unbelievable how the Mishnah says that with like no, like, Pasha, obviously. Shenema Ve'ya Yosef Likbor's Aviv, Ve'yalu Imo Gam Rechav Gam Parashim, Milanu Gadol Miyosef Shalon Nitasik Bo Ala Moshe. So now who's going to bury Yosef? It's got to be the greatest. It is. Moshe. Moshe Zachar Ba'atmos Yosef, Ve'ein Yisrael Gadol Mimenu. Now, Moshe, who was the one dealing with Atzmos Yosef, and no one was greater than him. Shenema Vikach Moshe Atzmos Yosef Imo. Mi Gadol Mi Moshe Shelo Nitzasik Bo El HaMakom. Now here comes the problem. Who's going to bury Moshe? Okay, so nobody's greater. That's a problem. But the solution is Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shenema Vikbar So Begai Lo Al Moshe Bavan Amru Ela Kol Sadikim Shenema Valoch Vanecha Tzikecha Kvod Hashem Yaspecha. So the Gemara says, and this is not just limited to Moshe, but rather it's true by all tzaddikim are going to be dealt with directly by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, exactly what that means, meaning by Moshe Rabbeinu, it's to be taken quite literally. By the other tzaddikim, exactly what that means. I quoted Rabbeinu Bachya before on Chumash, I'll quote it again. He says that the tzaddikim don't give off Tumas Ameis. Right, we discussed this previously, and he says, and one of the reasons why is because Tumas Ameis is a result of the fact that we all die because of our encounter with the Malcham Avos. It's the Rabbeinu Bachya writes on Chumash. So It's just I'm presenting one idea, which, you know, maybe is a way to understand the Mishnah. I don't know if he quotes the Mishnah. I have to review. But but he says, but when it comes to tzaddikim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them directly without the Malach HaMavis, and maybe that's what the Mishnah means over here as well. Tomorrow we'll start with the Gemara. Okay, there's a lot of Gemara coming up, so I'm going to read quickly. I apologize in advance, but the next couple of days I'm going to read very quickly through these Gemaras. But okay.
We completely have Tanakh.
Yeah.